What's up, guys? It's what day is it? Thursday? It's Thursday.
You were about to say Wednesday. I could see.
No, I mean, I honestly just didn't remember at all for a second. But no, it's good. It's a good Thursday so far.
The hammering still.
The hammering and construction still going on. But that's okay. It's what National Cereal Day today, I believe. Also National Be Heard Day. So we can hear that.
Be heard?
Be heard.
Be heard.
I want to make sure I heard that right.
Yeah, which to me, by the way, that sounds like a lame excuse for more people to continue to like talk about a bunch of crap they shouldn't be talking about, riot, protest. I don't know the intent behind it, but that's what it sounds like.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
One of them young things.
So, but let's do this. National Cereal Day, I can definitely get behind. I promise we've got news and stuff to get to here, too. But National Cereal Day, Mike Disco, favorite... I'll give you three. Favorite three cereals growing up.
Mm. Cookie Crisp, Cocoa Puffs, and Cocoa Krispies.
Very, very chocolatey there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you were running around like bouncing off walls.
My ADD was out of control.
Okay. If you had to pick one out of those.
Cookie Crisp.
Cookie Crisp?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
okay.
That's a damn good cereal.
Yeah.
Cookie Crisp. Yeah, okay, David.
Golden Grahams, Fruity Pebbles, and Fruit Loops. Oh, and Pops. I'm going to throw a fourth.
You're
one
an idiot.
There.
Yeah. Not Pops. You right. can't. They're too sugary.
Well, time out. You just said Cookie Crisp.
Did you? I'm sorry. I anything Mike says the rest of the day, I'm going to take his crap.
Those are all good. I feel like Fruit Loops and Fruity Pebbles real close. Same family, different texture.
Yeah. Yep.
You got to eat Fruity Pebbles fast because they get soggy quick.
Way too soggy.
Oh,
yeah. But I only fill the bowl like halfway up with milk. Like
Cocoa Pebbles good too. I'm kind of Cookie Crisp is good. Golden Grahams is good. I've got to probably put that on there. I liked Lucky Charms.
Oh yes.
And then it gets so tough. I mean, all those cereals made America great. Like Trump's talking about making America great again. Sugary cereals made America great growing up. Like Captain Crunch.
What about Golden Crisp? Do you remember that one?
Those are great.
That was a good one.
That was a good one.
You know, what was lame. The people who like rallied behind Honeycombs, that was some lame crap. They were fine.
They were too big to eat.
If you used it with chocolate milk, though.
Interesting.
Chocolate milk. Never done
how that. Much? How are you not a diabetic?
I went to the dentist so many times growing up.
That's.
But now it's Fiber One. It's
freaking
whatever the eaten air.
Do you want some apricots and some raw cashews?
Yeah,
that's all you get to eat.
No, when it's funny when I go.
Does anyone have someone who talks like that? By the way,
I don't know.
I don't know where that came from.
No, I'll be at the grocery store with my wife, and I'll put in. There'll be like Fruity Pebbles or something in there, and then. We had the kids with, and my wife would be at the register be like, "That's not for the kids; it's for my husband." And so,
totally. If I brought that home right now, I'd get murdered.
Yeah, I'd die of had a bowl of Cocoa Crisp right now. Cookie Crisp.
What are we doing now?
We should
stop. Go get some cereal.
Can we just stop down real quick?
Kayla, stop what you're doing.
Yes.
Go.
No,
now.
Don't send Kayla. Send Jenkins or
Jenkins.
Murphy.
Okay.
Yeah, Murphy. Yeah.
Son of a bitch. Get out there and get us some cereal.
Damn it, Jenkins.
Great show today. I promise it's going to get serious. Former ICE supervisor and author, host of the podcast, the Protectors podcast, Jason Piccolo, will be here to discuss his new book, Unwavering. So that's going to be fun. We're going to... This guy has done a lot of stuff. You've seen him on the show before. So we're excited to have him back and excited to celebrate this new book, which comes out next week. But we'll talk about that later. But we heard yesterday... how the DNC is blocking Fox News from hosting the Democratic primaries because they feel Fox has too close of a relationship with the president, to which I would say some hosts, I mean, like Hannity and some of them for sure, but as a whole, the network is moving dangerously away from their base, in my opinion, and lots of people like Shepard Smith and some of the other people there have been quite critical of the president and are kind of taking the whole Megyn Kelly approach.
Right.
So to me, and it spells disaster, too, when we, you know... It started, I guess, in 2016 when you've got New York Times and publications actually endorsing a president instead of just reporting the news. That's not good. And now you've got folks saying, hey, we're not going to let you even have, you conservative-minded people, any access or host one of these events.
Yeah.
This really sparks. I mean, people should recognize that this is taking us down a road we don't want to go down. It's very disappointing to me.
And you think of Brett Baer and Martha McCallum.
Yeah.
Brett Baer just won an award for journalistic integrity from the journalism people, whoever the hell that is. But
they're called the journalism people.
The journalism
people. I'm pretty sure that's what they're called.
I'm a journalist, so I know this.
I'm a learned doctor.
But that's the slippery slip. Like, here are people who have done that, who showed, you know, in good faith and the fast that have been, you know, fair and balanced.
Yeah.
Which their taglines are balanced. But at the same time, you know, they're obviously well-crafted journalists. And so, but you're taking people out of the fold now. Okay, Fox has the number one audience.
Yeah.
You're taking millions and millions of potential swing voters out of there as well, yeah, because they're not all right. So they may be down the middle, and they may think, you know, they watch Brett Baier, they watch Martha McCallum, they give a fair and, you know, balanced thing. But, you know, they're losing a lot of potential votes, I think.
Absolutely.
Just for being idiots.
Yeah, anyone who's more moderate, think of like a Joe Biden type who's a little bit more moderate, you know, establishment-like, not saying that I would vote for him, but he's not, you know, Kamala Harris or Spartacus Booker. Think of someone like him and someone who watches Fox, like you're saying, and is like, I'm fed up with Trump. He's not my style of president. Yep. Because there's plenty of conservatives who feel that way. Biden just lost out that huge chunk. I think it's a great point. And I think it's also like the advertising. There's a lot of advertisers who don't like working with conservative-minded companies. It's just stupid. You should be a capitalist. Hey, I want money from you. I want money from you. And when you draw a line in the sand and say, we only like these people, all right, that's your call. Right. But
I like money.
Yeah, I like money too. So in response, President Trump doubled down and tweeted this. Disco, I think we've got it. Democrats just blocked at Fox News from holding a debate. Good. Then I think I'll do the same thing with the fake news networks and the radical left Democrats in the general election debates. I love it. I mean, here's the thing. Like, you're screwing with a man that you don't want to screw with when it comes to this. He is going to play your game and he's going to beat you at it.
He does it. He proved it over time and time again.
Yeah.
You go that way, I'm going to go the same way. It's going to be a little bit more difficult for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I think is going to happen is I think they'll buckle and they'll end up letting Fox at least be involved. If they don't, then he can't. Same thing as we always talk about the wall. You can't buckle. You said that you're going to do this. Do it and make this.
Now you think, will Brett Baier, this is just the pie in the sky thing, will go on any of the other networks and be a moderator? Or Martha McCallum, will they allow them to do it if Fox News is excluded? But they're a Fox News, you know.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, they're deserving, but I don't
absolutely
know.
Absolutely deserving, but I mean, is that one of the way outs? Like, hey, we're not going to have Fox News, but we'll ask you to moderate one of these.
Maybe.
Fox would never let that.
Yeah, my guess is this either thing, it either gets fixed now and nipped in the bud, or it blows up and just gets really, really bad. So that's all disheartening, but I just want to throw this out there. This morning I was actually encouraged. I attended one of my daughter's schools where they did a classroom presentation celebrating the amazing people in America's history, which we really have. I mean, you had students talking about Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, Elizabeth Blackwell, George Washington, Helen Keller, Neil Armstrong, all these amazing people from different races, religions, everything. And then they sang songs, which I was pumped about. We should have sang them together here on the show. Sure. But songs about like how I love America, songs about freedom, about our creator, like all this stuff. Basically, like America kicks ass and we're a beautiful and talented melting pot. And it was good. And this is a public school, by the way. Most people teach a totally different curriculum. So at least this small class has a chance.
Hey. I'm all to it. I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
You said public, too. I was like, wow.
Yeah. No, I was pumped. I was kind of wispy-eyed in the background, like, yeah, America. Like, America's back, baby. I'm, like, kind of singing along the songs, like, go.
I wonder if they're going to get any complaints.
I hope they do, and then I hope that they fight.
Yes.
Let's just
get to the point where we're fighting. And they're like, who's that? Like, oh, he used to be a counterterrorism, you know, person. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you hear music?
I just heard music. I don't know what you're doing.
My bad.
That's not the music I was talking about, Disco. No, but it was encouraging to see. As broken as everything is everywhere else, we talk about all these headlines. We're about to do it again in a second here, but it was encouraging.
There's help in Florida.
There's help in Florida. Hey, there's like 23 little young kids who are being raised the right way and singing the right songs, and it's being...
We've got a chance.
Interesting side point, not in the headlines, but did you read that article how, you know, you've got folks from the Democratic side who are just essentially giving up on Ohio?
No, saying, I didn't.
Hey, we see this going just as a red state, going from purple to red, and they're going to place less emphasis there.
Ohio.
Big state. I mean, critical state.
You need, yeah.
Yeah, so you need that to win. You need here to win, too. It's terrifying how kind of purple we're getting. But we staved off the possible
I think we staved off the governor election, gubernatorial election.
Gubernatorial.
There's the word for the day, gubernatorial.
Give the governor a harumph.
Sound like George, but gubernatorial.
Did you, you know what? Anyways, I'm going to move on. So let's take a trip across the headlines.
Yeah,
how about
do
that?
Yeah.
So there's no crisis at the border. We don't have an illegal immigration problem. That's what a lot of people are saying. Not true. The new projections, as we talked about here recently, reveal that illegal immigration this year is on pace to more than triple the levels of just 2 years ago. As we said yesterday, there were more than 76,000 illegal border crossings and inadmissible foreign nationals that we know of in the month of February alone. the most in this month in 12 years. So like, huge numbers. And at this pace, according to the experts at least, it's projected that illegal border crossings for this calendar year will be more than 3 times what they were in 2017 and nearly double last year's total crossings. Folks, with nearly 1 million predicted this year, we've got a crisis. That's what you call a crisis. You spell it C-R-I-S-I-S. Basically, a country without borders is not a country at all. And beyond that, from a humanitarian perspective, this is what kills me
too.
Deterring people and their children from making this dangerous and illegal journey to the United States is the right thing to do. Like, go through the process, go through the consulate in the area, embark on like the legal journey to come here the right way. Because as we just talked about, this country kicks ass. Like, it's a badass place. That like, there's fields of unicorns roaming. Like, we have fireworks every day. We should. Why don't we do that? But no, it's a great spot. But having people go the way that they are doing, you've seen the stats. You've seen the stats of rape. You've seen how families are just having their kids go with these other folks, the coyotes, the cartels. And it's just ridiculous. And denying that this whole thing is a crisis and just wanting it to be free is like denying that the sky is blue or like thinking that Bradley Manning is now a girl. He's not. Born a dude, still a dude.
Still a dude.
So both untrue. We've got a crisis. It's a crisis.
Well, yeah, I think you made it the point. It's also a humanitarian crisis. I mean, it's not a manufactured humanitarian. You saw by the pictures there.
Yeah.
You know, you have people carrying kids with sweaters on their backs tied up walking down railroad tracks or sitting on the border in tents for months and months in food shortages. So that's the whole point is, like, what, if you build a wall, you fund them in one place, but all these migrants are going to come up and they're going to sit in tent cities getting fed with, you know, what about all the vaccines that they're not getting and all these other things? I mean, they're just not thinking this through. They're thinking it's just a wall to keep illegals out.
Yeah.
It's making sure they're healthy enough, A, to come in and to get fed and be a part of the society.
Yeah.
But no, it's just a wall. You're evil, evil people.
Well, and turn that back around on them, people. When they give you that, but this is humanity. It's not about the wall and this, that, and the other, or the laws. It's about doing the right thing and humanitarian. As we're saying here, flip it around. Like, you're damn straight it's about humanitarian efforts. Yep. Like, so let's take care of these people, the ones that are doing it. They're coming illegally. They're doing it wrong. But if they're going to, we're still offering to help them. But it's got to be done the right way. And there's a better solution to what everyone is saying right now. Folks on the right, too, going full on board, you know, just build the wall and screw them. Well, no, let's find some middle ground.
Well, and I would say what the hard part is there's a lot of people who are complaining like this, but then they come from a family that did it the proper way through the proper channels.
Yeah.
And maybe they were too young to know that, or they don't know that. They're just like, well, I came from there too. And they don't know that their family waited that timeline, those 3-4 years to finally get it approved, and that they're U.S. citizens, all that stuff. And they forget that that's where they came from.
Yeah.
And that's what drives me crazy. It's like, where did you come from? Learn that, then come back and tell me if you're upset about it.
Yeah. Well,
and that's the other thing too. If you think of it from the humanitarian perspective, if you don't want a wall, build a standoff zone, fine. If this is your plan, you're going to house all these people in tents, then you come down there and feed them. You take care of them. With all these other plans, you don't have a plan. We talked about yesterday. There is absolutely no plan. It's just rhetoric right up front.
Exactly.
Period.
Yep. Period. Great point. And with that point, we're going to move on. But we're going to kind of stay in the same area because Tucker Carlson last night, again on Fox News, second time we've mentioned Fox today, but he took on insanity on a show. A Univision reporter battled him on the whole crisis at the border discussion. It's kind of a longer clip. But it gets into humanitarian stuff and racism and all this kind of stuff. Take a look.
Gangs, I'm sure this is happening
racist.
Now as we speak.
I'm a racist for wanting to control who comes into my country. The overwhelming majority
the
of our immigration
comes from conflating immigration with
happen?
Crime and terrorism
anything.
And economic hardship,
I'm not
Tucker. That's another
anything.
Reality.
I'm not conflating
every
anything.
Every time
what
we talk about immigration
is,
on your show, there's a negative
really
connotation to this discussion.
Because
there are even negative images
negative.
Illustrating
okay.
immigrants, like okay. dangerous gangs and
let me ask
that
kind
of thing.
Does it take, I'm trying not to use a vulgarity on the air, it takes a lot of chutzpah, doesn't it, to come into someone's country without permission, illegally, break their laws, use their social services, and then whip around and call them racist, which is the game. That kind of takes a lot of guts, doesn't it?
Well,
would any other
you
country
put, like
put
that,
up with
but
that crap?
I don't
crap
think that's
for
what's happening with
you're
them.
You're doing that to me right now. I'm a racist.
I'm not
if
using
I don't
any social services. I'm actually paying hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes.
You.
And I don't use any social services because as an immigrant, I can't until I become a citizen. You know that, right? Even as a permanent resident legal, I mean, a legal
I wonder,
resident,
you know, it's been a
I
very generous country for a long time. And this kind of abuse makes Americans more cynical and less generous. And so if you want immigration to continue to enrich this country, you've got to get it under control and let Americans decide who comes and who doesn't. That's it. That's simple. And stop calling them racist, because it's very tiresome. It's dumb.
Again,
too.
The racism comes from conflating immigration with crime, with terrorism,
whatever,
and economic hardship.
You're calling Americans racist because they don't like being.
I thought it was done. Sorry, I just kept going.
That was a great point.
No, the whole discussion, it's like a 5-minute discussion. I encourage you to go watch it. Because it is a great argument, and you get the same old stuff from him, from the guest, and pure logic from Tucker. And I'm not just defending him because he works on a right-leaning network.
Because he's right.
But he's right. I mean, the man is right. Like, you don't have to like him. People don't like that he laughs at people sometimes and this, that, and the other. But he is a very smart man, and if you can peel away the emotion, as we always say, and just look at the logic, in the points that are brought up there, they're pure, they're true, and it's just real.
I think the main point of that, Americans are tired of being called racist.
Yeah, totally.
Period.
Yeah. I mean, there are rules here. This is our country at the end of the day. We want to do things the right way, but we expect others to do the same.
Absolutely.
And then when we allow them to not do it, you know, the legal way, and then we're called racist for then saying, well, you need to do it the legal way. Like, it's literally just this ridiculous cyclical argument that they had for 5 minutes, and that's what's going on in America. But it just, there's a common sense approach to all of this, and no one just seems to be taking it. So, but great interview. So it's just politics. Ever since the Democrats took over the House, the ever predictable war President Trump has been on, President Trump rather, has been constant. They've tried to undermine his efforts to date, not focusing on any of the positive elements such as jobs, unemployment, energy, and so many other areas that we mentioned on the show. Where we're clearly winning with data, but also areas like international diplomacy, where countries around the world know that we're back and really don't, you know, that we're not going to take their BS anymore. I mean, we got walked all over under the last administration, you know, for a period of 8 years and a little bit afterwards, too, because we're kind of settling into this new administration. But the Democrats have stayed on their mark of attacking regardless. However, there are some concerns about how far they will go among the party. Apparently, Democrats are becoming less willing to go after Trump's children and adding them into their political squabbles with the president, particularly as it pertains to these investigations. You know, we just talked about how they opened up an obstruction of justice investigation. They've got plans for all these different ideas to go after him, really just to slander his name. Representative Jerry Connolly, a Democrat out of Virginia and a senior member of the House Oversight and Reform Committee, said, quote, "Getting to family members, I think, is dangerous only because it gets real personal real fast and it risks backfiring. Maybe at some point we have to call them in," he added, "but I'd rather let the prosecutors look at that." So some wisdom there coming from this man, Connolly. Yes, it can backfire on you. And I think ultimately all this negativity does backfire.
It will backfire.
Because it's just, there's no substance to it. This is it's the Kavanaugh card. You know, it's the Christine Blasey Ford.
Blasey,
sorry. She's wearing a blouse. Her name is Blasey. But no, it's that card. Like, right. This backfires.
You can't do it because, you know, when Trump wins, he's going to win in 2020. But after that, who knows what's going to happen.
Right.
It's going to come back and all this is going to go back around. It's going to be that vicious circle again. So kids have always been off limits.
Yep.
I mean, you started with Carter, right? And then you went through, you know, then you had Clinton and all that. And, poor people growing up in the White House. You know, I feel sorry for Barron Trump, but they've done a hell of a job keeping him out of the spotlight.
Yeah.
And I think the media has actually done a hell of a job keeping him out of the spotlight. But as far as the other ones, they're kind of, to me, though, are in fair game because they're in the political sphere.
Well, that's the thing. Like, when you look at Eric, you know, Don Jr., Ivanka, Jared,
they're
part of the company. They're part of the political aspect. Yeah. So they really, I mean, that's a fair point. And they have done a really good job keeping Barron out of it. The mainstream media, there was the event where they were really rough on him, and it was completely inappropriate. But since then, everyone was like, okay, that was a bad move.
Yep.
so they have learned, and I don't know how you play it with these big kids.
I'm not going to bring it in my kids to politics.
Yeah.
But yeah, how do you play it with the big kids? Unfortunately, they are grown adults that came into this administration as grown adults, and part of his administration, just like you said, you know, his former company. So.
Well, at the end of the day, it's all, regardless of where you stand on it, you should be able to agree that this is all political theater.
Yep.
You know, they're going after him for a very, very specific reason. Would they love to have him indicted or, you know, these charges brought up? Of course they would. But most of them don't even believe there's anything there. And I can guarantee to you, they've got people saying, look, you're not going to get anywhere. But they've still said behind closed doors, okay, well, let's keep doing this because this still, as we keep saying on the show, keeps that narrative out there that Trump's a bad guy, he's a bad guy, he's got all these investigations when there's no substance there. But the two things I'll say about this is I do think that they're fair game, you know, the older kids just because of their roles. But it is very clearly, you know, political theater. The intent is to keep him in the headlines. And then the second thing is I kind of feel bad slash good for Tiffany Trump. It has to be kind of nice.
You don't hear anything about her.
Yeah. Everyone talks about Ivanka, even her dad. Like, even President Trump talks about Ivanka all the time. Poor Tiffany is like she might be chained up in a basement somewhere. I don't know. Like,
I honestly to God, I have not heard or seen her since the election.
Yeah.
I mean, I really have.
Every once in a while, you'll see her like quietly in the background of an event.
Is she a socialite now? Or
I've barely even seen Barron, too.
I haven't either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how old is Tiffany?
She's old. I mean, she's an adult.
Yeah, she's an adult.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's a damn good point. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. I mean,
Tiffany, well done.
Yeah.
Well done for keeping in the.
You're playing it right. You might be thinking like negative thoughts about yourself because you're not Ivanka. I get that. But it's working out in the end. So all these investigations aren't good for President Trump, and neither is the trade deficit right now. Despite some victories for the president in other areas, the U.S. trade deficit jumped nearly 19% in December, pushing the trade imbalance to a decade-long high of $621 billion. The gap with China on goods widened to an all-time record of $419.2 billion. The gap between what the United States sells and what it buys from other countries rose to $59.8 billion in December from $50.3 billion in November. That's what the Commerce Department said. Adjusted for inflation, December was the highest imbalance in trade goods in the basically in U.S. history. So, look, let me come out and say this. I'm no trade expert. all right? Just read a lot of numbers there. You don't want me handling, like, trades and this, that.
I need to read.
Yeah. But not good. I mean, I've read several articles about this. There is, you know, some consensus that we need to get this fixed. These figures undermine the key commitment by President Trump. A lot of the articles highlighted, who had promised to cut off the trade imbalance on the belief that it would bring, you know, overseas factory jobs back here, bolster the U.S. economy, all that kind of stuff, which the job stuff back here has been good. But the problem is, as soon as we put new tariffs on China, data indicated that demands for imported goods went up. So, you know, he thought, hey, we're gonna crack down on you here. We're going to bring more jobs back. But the proof was in the pudding that Americans still were buying, you know, iPhones and crap like that that's coming from overseas. Things aren't looking good with Europe and Mexico either. But before diehard MAGA fans chastise me for saying anything negative about the president, first of all, you know I'm on your side. But I think these are areas that President Trump can and will excel in. He'll improve these areas. The tariffs, despite the trade deficit, are still critical to reining China in, and you can't have everything perfect. So as we adjust in one area, naturally we're going to have to take away from one other area, and then you got to go back and fix it. So, but when it comes to business, trade, negotiations, all this kind of stuff, this is the guy you want doing it.
Sure.
Like, he's a master at this stuff.
Well, Brian Brinker wrote a great article for Hobson's the other day about this, talking about now, America, some of the business owners have a part of this to play, too, because as soon as they thought they were going to get tariffs, they literally stockpiled everything else. So the demand is here now. It's not over, you know, getting the, and I'm not a trade expert by all means.
None of us are. Disco, are you a trade expert?
No. Sorry, I have not been hiding that from you. No.
Yeah. But yeah, so I didn't think so.
The you know, it just went higher and higher because they already had the products here. Because they went out and did this before the price went up.
Right.
So they shipped everything in before the tariffs got enacted. And so that's playing apparently a part of this, but it explains it much better in the article. But you know, that's the whole thing. It's another reason. It's like, oh, wow, you know, these business owners actually had a hand in this as well.
Right.
Right, wrong, or different, I don't know.
Yeah.
Trade experts out there,
yeah,
please let me know. Call me an idiot.
He is. We all are. But I think the point is people are sounding the alarm. The deficit's the highest it's been, this, that, and the other. But again, the tariffs had to happen for their own separate reason. There's going to be an imbalance that comes from that. This guy knows what he's doing in terms of business. People might not like how he tweets or delivers a speech or this, that, or the other, but we know that he's a good businessman, right. And this will correct itself. There'll be some adjustments that are made. So, but speaking of people like Trump who are wealthy and successful, this story makes me feel good. So the going to my daughter's school earlier made me feel good about Americans. This makes me feel better about myself. Like maybe there's actually you know, a chance out there. So according to the author of the best-selling book, Rich Habits, The Daily Success Habits of Rich Individuals, Tom Corley, who interviewed several high earners to better detail the earliest tells of a self-made millionaire, you might be surprised to learn, and this is where I get excited, that good grades in school seem to bear no obvious positive indication of a future mogul. In fact, the majority of all self-made success stories begin with C students. Only 21% received A's in the school growing up. So, hey, you can be an average dumb kid like me and still make it, folks.
Me too.
Look, Disco, you know, did you get good grades?
No. I was about a C student, D student, so yeah, no.
I mean, D's going a little too far. Yeah. You got to put in a little.
I'm saying, like, it was like, oh, like, my parents would be like, why do you have a D? Like, oh, so I'd work real hard just to get the C, and then that was it.
I remember when I got bad grades, I had to, like, do chores. I had to paint the house.
Yeah.
Paint the garage, or, you know, and do things, like, paint the fence. Paint the fence? I got a D.
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
Well, yeah, I think they were just prepping you for what you were probably
going
to do.
Now you're going in.
He's
going
to be a fence painter. Like, get your craft down.
That's right.
Corley, the author, believes that the correlation survives in the idea of tenacity. This is where we differ a little bit, because I just was like, this is what I need to do to hit here and survive. That's right. All I'm going to do. But individuals that are determined but struggle with academics are more likely to develop skills of resilience. You must grow thick skin and become accustomed to struggle if you hope to succeed. Do agree with that point. You got to have hustle, got to have tenacity. Maybe not when it comes to grades. But So last story here before we take a break. More potential problems for AOC. DC-based ethics group is now claiming that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's social media usage violates House ethic rules. And it basically goes against using taxpayer resources for political purposes, according to the complaint that the Foundation for Accountability and Civic Trust, or FACT, planned to file earlier today. Ocasio-Cortez's political Instagram account contains direct links to her House Instagram account and includes a link for political contributions alongside posts of official video footage on the House floor. The group claims these actions violate House ethics rules. Kendra Arnold, the executive director of FACT, told the Daily Caller that, in a way, it's a straightforward complaint. She continued, broadly speaking, the rules clearly define that politics and government works cannot overlap. There are reasons for that, mostly because we don't want our taxpayer dollars going toward campaigns. Another quote, from Arnold said, one is influencing the other, referring to what she believes is the New York Democrats' penchant for using Twitter as a form of cross-promotion. Once we elect, you cannot use whatever the government provides you for political purposes. Part of the issue is one violation stacked on another. So AOC just not getting good press this week. You know, there was the $885,000 mishap, just a little bit of money with the FEC. And now you've got this. Again, I think a lot of this is gamesmanship. No one likes her. Let's try and come up with some stuff to go after her. I think that there was some wrongdoing here, because the people putting forth these complaints aren't like,
right,
you know, just nobody.
It's a fix. Yeah. Oh, yeah, this one thing led to another. I'm going to keep this account separate from this account.
Yeah.
What's the difference from then President Trump being president to having his business in hotels if they're cross-pollinating?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's the same thing. They're doing the exact same thing on both sides.
It is. Well, I think it's just, that's new America. This is just how things work now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like there's an easy fix, but now it's just so political, you're just going to start lobbing grenades at anything you can find and keep throwing and throwing until it literally you hit an exact hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. So I couldn't agree more.
It's a Twitter account.
Yeah. I don't personally care about it, but it's not good news for her.
I glossed over that whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, Mike glossed over it, so it's not a big deal. Okay, we're going to take a break. On the other side, we'll chat with former ICE supervisor Jason Piccolo. See you there. All right, welcome back, folks. Our next guest is a good friend of the show. Jason Piccolo is a former ICE supervisor, the host of the Protectors podcast, and the author of the forthcoming book, Unwavering, and he joins us now. Jason, good to see you, man.
Hey, great to see you, too.
Yeah, so first off, we ran into each other at CPAC, almost quite literally, actually, last week. Was that your first time there?
Yeah, it was, and it was quite random. I look up and I'm like, wow, that looks like Drew.
Yeah, same thing. And then you said hi. I'm like, I was blown off. I was caught off guard seeing you there, but it was a good time. I know you were just there that one day with Chad. What were your overall impressions though of the what you kind of saw and took in while you were there?
That was really cool, you know. And I did a chat with Chad Prather for a bit, and you know, just walking around meeting people was pretty interesting. Very interesting crew.
Yeah. Well, it blew my mind to see, you know, I had never been either. It was our first time there. Just how many people, you've seen, you know, images like on the news, like last year, you know, the speeches. And obviously that room is full, particularly when President Trump speaks. But it was crazy just how many people were there. I mean, it was the hotel was swarmed. Great facility, by the way. Okay, but on to the book, the reason we brought you here today. So you're doing a lot with podcasts, media. Obviously, you've been doing, you know, Media Blitz for quite some time. And now books as well. So Unwavering, A Border Agent's Journey from Hunter to Hunted comes out March 15th, next Friday, right?
Yeah, next Friday. And I'm pretty psyched about it. And I'm pretty nervous, too. So, yeah.
All sorts of emotions going through. Those are all natural. So let's do this. The audience doesn't know what it's about. What's the book about and what inspired you to write it?
Well, what inspired me to write it was, you know, obviously, you know, we go back a little bit. But I blew the whistle in 2015 when all these little kids were coming across the border. And I said, you know what, I have some experience on a border. You know, why don't I put it down on paper? So the book is going to be my journey from becoming an enlisted member in the military in the 1990s to becoming a Border Patrol agent, working human trafficking, human smuggling there, and then becoming a customs special agent, ICE special agent on the border, working these major narcotics smuggling organizations, trying to put them out of business. There's going to be a short pit stop of me heading over to Iraq as an infantry officer in between there, and then when I came back, you know, becoming an ICE supervisor, and eventually blowing the whistle on my own government. So it's going to be a whole journey. It's pretty good, I think. It just tells my story, and it kind of gives you the reality of what's going on down at the border right now.
We've never really talked. I mean, we've known each other now for a pretty good chunk of time. We've never really talked about that. How much? I mean, do you get a lot of flack? You know, what's the response of some of your former colleagues for blowing the whistle, you know, ahead of all that you're doing now? But when that happened, and I guess leading up to now, what has been that response?
Now, my coworkers, you know, the line agents and some of the junior managers are really, you know, they're really supportive. It's the ones that the optics would kind of ruin or kill their career that were kind of like, who is this Piccolo guy? What's he doing?
Right.
But overall, I had a very, very positive experience from the people. I didn't lose any friends over it, I can tell you that.
That's good. That's good. Well, and I think that's typically how it works in government. For those that aren't familiar with government, is you've got your folks, and you could, you know, the perfect example is all this stuff that was going off the FBI. Not comparing that to what you your stuff at all, but you know, everyone's given the FBI relentless just crap and flack, and it's all because of Comey and McCabe and these people up top. But the worker bees are just going out and doing their jobs and trying to keep the country safe. And oftentimes you've got those folks on the ground who signed up for the right reasons. The folks that rise to the top. Rise to the top for the wrong reasons, and they're career politicians and careerists, and just, you know, you get a lot of that going there, so it makes sense what you're saying there. In terms of, you know, there's a big discussion right now about whether it's, we talked earlier in the show about it too, whether this is a crisis or not. You've got numbers that look like they're going to triple those of 2017 this year by year's end if everything keeps on pace. Would you call it a crisis?
I would. And it's not just the border itself. It's what's going on in the Central and South America that's pushing everything north. You know, knowing that if they send enough bodies or if they walk and get across our border, they're going to get a foothold here to get some sort of immigration benefit. But then on this side of the border, when you're not just talking about immigration, you're talking about narco trafficking and all the opioids coming across, we need to do something about it. And, you know, I've always been a big proponent of putting up a fence, wall, whatever, not over the whole border. You need a whole approach to this. You're going to need boots on the ground. You're going to need Border Patrol agents. You're going to need a partial fence to move the traffic to where they could apprehend them. But then we also need to hire a whole bunch of special agents to go after these big smuggling organizations. So if there is a crisis, you're talking a million bodies about to hit to come in just 1 year alone. That's crazy.
Yeah. When we're already so backlogged, I mean, you see the stats that were thrown out there by CBP officials, DHS officials, and, you know, the system, we knew this before all this was even a discussion point, you better than any of us, but that the system's backlogged across all fronts, not just there on terrorism issues, on regular old law enforcement issues in local communities. everyone is inundated with files and there's a backlog on so many things. And then when you take and you compound that by a million people, hey, we're already getting crushed on the immigration front. We don't have enough bodies. There's not enough time to handle everything. And you throw that on top. It's just insane. The whole thing is insane. How granular does the book get in terms of talking about what you saw and the types of people? And I don't want to say atrocities because there's good people coming across. But how granular does it get?
It gets very granular. And that's what I liked about writing the book, because not only does it cover the things I've seen, and actually, you know, after 10 years being in the military to going on and knowing that there's actual pure evil out there, that's, you can see that in a book. But then I also end the book after I blew the whistle, what I've been doing since then, you know, about the types of people coming across the border, my experiences, my op-eds, the border reality. And I really get into that as deep as I can.
I love it. I love it. Well, we're excited that you're doing it. I'm excited that for you that it's coming out. I know there's some nervousness, but be excited. It's going to go great. And it's important right now, particularly with what's going on, that this story is told. So we wish you the best of luck. Where's the best place for people to get a copy?
Right now, you can pre-order it on Amazon. It comes out March 15th. I'm recording the Audible myself, so you'll hear this awesome voice. And then it's also going to be on a Kindle version as well.
Awesome. I love it. Well, Jason, thanks so much for being here. Of course, we'll have you back to talk about this and all the issues surrounding your old work and our immigration crisis, ordeal, whatever you want to call it here. But best of luck with this. We'll be rooting for you, and we'll see you real soon.
Thanks.
All right, folks, be sure to grab a copy. Like you said, or Jason said, you can go pre-order a copy now on Amazon. You're going to be able to download it, listen to his sweet, smooth voice that we love hearing on the show. But the book is Unwavering, A Border Agent's Journey from Hunter to Hunted, coming from the mind of someone who has been down there, folks. He's been there, done that, like so many of us here at OpsLens, so we appreciate his service. On the other side, we're going to do some apologies. I've got some people I gotta say sorry to, so we'll do that. Stick around. All right, so I was thinking, as the show went on here and kind of prepping for it today, with this new crop of freshman congresswomen, Ilhan, you know, Omar being an anti-Semite, and then you've got the folks that aren't the freshmen, like Maxine Waters being, well, I guess Maxine, I've come out and I've said some things that I should probably apologize for. So, Disco, if you wouldn't mind, to end the show, if you could just cue up my apology music. Ilhan, I'm going to start with you. Dear Ilhan Omar, I'm sorry that you have so much hatred in your heart towards Jews. No, seriously, like it must be rough to struggle with so much of that, the internal and emotional, nay, the spiritual battle. But here in America, we try to allow other people to have their own spiritual beliefs, and we don't murder or behead them if they believe something different. Anyways, despite all this, I'm glad you're here, because like your fellow freshman congresswomen, you provide endless entertainment and reason for me to pick on you and your ludicrous statements and behavior. So in advance of everything I will say to you moving forward, I'm sorry. All right, I mean, that felt good to get that off my chest.
Okay, I was gonna ask, like, do you feel relieved?
No, I actually do. Like, I feel like, you know, we've been doing STEM therapy, from MyTouch, from NeuroCore USA. And that feels amazing. That's kind of how I feel right now. There's like a little bit of weight. But if you guys are good, maybe I'll just do one more.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Let's do one for Maxine Waters, because I referenced her in the open, so.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Dear Auntie Maxine, Maxie, Buttercup, my little corrupt California angel, I'm sorry that you're having to fight for your life to stay in the limelight. With these young white coats storming DC, it must be rough after surging in popularity last year, though clearly not in intelligence, only now to be viewed as the irrelevant politician that you've always been. But in a gesture of kindness towards you, I'd like to provide a suggestion to improve your odds of getting some good attention. It would seem, in all of the crazy things that you say, that you only know two phrases, Lion Trump and the word impeachment. You've kind of become a broken record. So if you could learn some other words, I know, it's tough, but I think that you'll find the reception that you get to be at least slightly warmer. And that's all I have to say to you today. All right, well.
Oh, so you're not gonna say, you're not gonna apologize.
No, I mean, I said sorry towards the beginning. The more I think about it, I don't really want to apologize to her.
That was like Forrest Gump, like, that's all I gotta say about that.
And that's all I gotta say about that. No, but that felt good. I really do think Maxine is fighting for her life to actually be relevant again. Like, I think she hates these young bucks, or no, does. We came up with does yesterday.
Does.
Yeah. These young does. Was Bambi a boy or a girl, by the way?
I have no idea. I never saw it.
You didn't?
Nope. Refused to watch it.
So sad.
Bambi?
It's like Old Yeller. Never watched it.
Yeah, don't watch Old Yeller.
I think Bambi's a boy.
I think so, too.
It's a fawn with spots, right?
Yeah, that's true. We don't want a dead name or misgender Bambi.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Twitter will ban us. Yeah. Anyways, that's...
Yes, he is a boy. He grows horns later.
Okay, so, we're being told...
Antlers.
That he grows antlers or horns.
Horns.
So he's a boy.
I was told horns. I gave you the information, okay?
He's a ram deer. He's a ram deer. We just made that up. That's great.
Yep,
we're going to make a shirt. You know, support ram deer. They're damn near extinct, people. All right, we're gonna run. Thanks for enduring our apologies. One more great show for you this week, so don't miss that tomorrow. And remember, folks, when it comes to your news and political commentary, experience matters. See you tomorrow.